yourself in some kind of austerity and say, I don't want this. I don't want this is also another form of selfishness. Don't jump to any conclusions. I don't want this is another form of selfishness. And therefore one has to be vigilantly watchful. In the meantime, it is possible to see some form of good action, what is called righteous action, as being capable of promoting this inner transparency, loving service, service especially of those from whom you do not expect any reward, reciprocity. Can you be of service to someone from whom you do not expect a reward or return? A poor person, a sick person, a blind one. These can all be quite what one may call small little bits and pieces of service. You see a blind man standing at the crossroads, frightened that he might be run over by a car. You get hold of him and take him across the road and leave him there and go. He doesn't know who you are and you don't know who he is. These are excellent methods by which one can train oneself. For what? For detecting self. These are not unselfish or selfless activities in themselves. They are called unselfish activities, selfless activities, because they lead you on towards this and to the discovery of the self. You do something marvelous one day. Somebody was drowning in the lake, and even without taking your clothes off, or your jewelry off, or your watch off, you jump into the lake, pull that person out, and you didn't even ask for his name and address, nothing at all, and you just walked away. You ruined your dress and you ruined your watch. It's a marvelous piece of work, tremendously important as a karma yogi. Then you go home and dry yourself. Look into the mirror. Nice, good job. You resist the temptation of sharing this piece of, you know, karma yoga with others, because you remember Swami Shivananda telling you that you shouldn't boast about let your right hand does not know what your left hand does. You know, that you remember. And so you are very quiet and very, you know. If you continue to be quiet and very holy, and every morning you look at yourself in the mirror, there is a greater and greater glow. Where does the glow come from? The glow comes from the inner satisfaction. I have done a tremendous piece of good work, and only the Lord knows it. Just only you. And I have not only done this, I have even resisted the temptation of telling about it to my friends in the ashram. That's it. And I'm a good person. I am marvelous. That's it. This is karma yoga. Even up to that point, one is watchful. Isn't that an activity of the same self? This is much more subtle than the grosser forms of selfishness, yes? So, it's much subtler. And therefore, in a way, in a manner of speaking, it is more difficult to overcome. In a manner of speaking, if you have been vigilant all through, it's easy to see the operation of the self. where it is not complicated at all. It is not complicated by human relationship and reciprocity. You're not in, no other person is involved in this. And it is not complicated by your taking other people into confidence, and therefore it's snowballing everywhere. And you are alone, locked with this inner satisfaction, inner feeling, and you can watch. Aha. So, even at this stage, the self is still there. The self does want some satisfaction. When one reaches that stage, it is not difficult to discover the self. Discover it in the simplest meaning of the word, uncover it. And to see how ugly and how stupid it is. And therefore, such selfish, unselfish actions are prescribed. Do such unselfish actions. Because they in themselves promote social, human welfare. That's important. Whether or not you are truly unselfish, you have done a good job, right? Pull that man out of the lake. In a manner of speaking, again, if you had not done that, he would have drowned. So society is happy. You have promoted human welfare, right? Good, very good. For the time being, we are talking on a plane of duality, diversity. On that plane of diversity, you have done a good job, and society is pleased with it. That's good. And now, within yourself, if you have been vigilant, if you have been careful, you would also have noticed the action of the self or the ego in ever so many different aspects, in ever so many different disguises. The self operates not only in the gross material plane, I've done you a good job and you must pay me, or you must do something like that, or go and advertise my good action. One form of advertisement is to ask you not to advertise my good action. Don't tell anybody. Means go and tell everybody. Without, as you go on doing this, you're also watching within yourself to see in how many ways this self is playing up. And then eventually, that funny satisfaction. When you go to bed, I've done a nice, nice job. Nobody knows, not even my right hand. I pulled him up with the left hand. And that satisfaction, according to me, I don't know if you agree with it, and especially if you remember the shell and all your heaven, your hell and your God and your Savior and all this are within your shell, that satisfaction itself is heaven. I don't know if there is any other heaven elsewhere. When I go to bed and feel supremely satisfied, I've done a tremendous good job. And you may even use such expressions as, it's all due to God's grace, I have done a good job. It's slightly better than the other fellow. And when your own heart says, I am slightly better than him, he went about boasting, I never boast. Have you heard this? He goes about boasting. If he doesn't, does a little silly little bit of job, he goes about boasting and telling everybody what a... I don't boast at all. I look in the mirror and say, that is boasting. That is boasting too. But yet, once again I must return to that. To the fact that such services are better than grossly selfish living. whether or not you are redeemed, you are saved, whether or not you graduate to be a real true karma yogi, such actions, such activities promote social welfare, human welfare, and so they are good actions. In the same spirit, you will find in the most scriptures the gospel of duty. You must do this. That is, it is externally imposed karma yoga sadhana. You are not merely encouraged to do good actions, but you are almost forced to do good actions. That's called the concept of duty. You may or may not want to do it, but you are asked to do it, you are made to do it. So that their hope again is that one of these days you will develop a taste for these good actions. Like, children being taken to school. First they resist and they cry and they weep and so on. You spank them and put them at school. Then they cultivate some friends at school. Then you don't have to tell them, they go. Or they get a couple of quick promotions at school. Then they are tempted to go. You can't keep them away. They run away to school. So, first there is the gospel of duty. I must do this. It's my duty. If you have ever been at the other end of the stick, it is unpleasant. I don't know if you have seen this. I have a friend in Madras, South India. He is also a devotee of Swami Shivananda. If some of us go to him and tell him, Mr. So-and-so, would you please... do me this favor. Oh, Swamiji, it is my duty. I am duty bound to do this. I feel like saying no, please. <I don't know. laughs> you know, it's my duty to serve you. Can you see a sour? Huh? You smell something sour in it. I don't, left to myself, I wouldn't do it. But it is my duty, you know. The people who formulated this code thought that if they forced you to do this, there is an immediate result in that duty helps other people. Never mind whether you are cooking out of love or out of joy. Food is being cooked and other people are, the hunger of other people is appeased. So that is the gospel of duty. It's not often very satisfactory, however much we may gloat over it and gloss over it and, paint it in lovely colors. This gospel of duty is not such a pleasant thing to discuss even. Then, just like the schoolboy who is made to go to school because it is your duty to go to school, or he is made to feel that it is my duty to go to school because my mother wants or my father wants, he goes there and he makes some friends. The next stage is, I like it. I love it. From duty, you graduate, it gives me pleasure to go there. It gives me pleasure to go there, to do this. And then you do it out of love. That's something better, slightly better. When I want to do this, then the third stage is reached when you want to do this, and you do this not only because it is your duty, and later you realize that whether I have done it or not, the situation is still the same. You go on feeding somebody, feeding and feeding and feeding, first because you think it is your duty, and secondly, you love that person, it gives you pleasure. And then one day you are sick of it. You are disappointed. And then why do you do it? All this motivation seems to be meaningless. The feeling that it is my duty to do so, and the feeling that it is my pleasure to do so, or I love to do this, all these things seem to have lost their meaning, and you just do without any motivation. Ultimately, we must reach that stage. And to help us in this, in Karma Yoga, we have what are known as the bhavanas. We shall discuss them tomorrow. Bhavana, because it is not the action itself that matters, it is the bhavana. Bhavana is very difficult to translate. It may be the inner attitude, the inner feeling, the inner knowledge. It is that matters in Karma Yoga. Durena hyavaram karma buddhi yoga dhananjaya. Mere action is far inferior, he says, Krishna, to buddhi yoga. So bhavana is what takes place in your buddhi while you are engaged in your service and in your action. From the point of view of buddhi yoga, of course, it is not a special form of service that is karma yoga. It is your whole life, even the most prosaic daily action can be karma yoga. The whole life is karma yoga. If the buddhi is turned in the proper direction, if the buddhi is facing the right direction, then whatever action takes place in your life is part of Karma Yoga. We'll get tomorrow.